I believe in my powers.
I believe in my powers.
I believe in the powers of my teammates.
I believe in the power of my teammates.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in my powers.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
I trust in the powers of my teammates.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Look, okay, just get any blunt objects together, all right? Get cornered, bash them in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, what are we, a team? No. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos.
Gentlemen, I'm Agent Carter. I supervise all operations for this division.
The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few.
And
angels of love!
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show.
Torch of Cinema, 20,000 Hours Under the Sea. The movie Sphere.
Thank you, Paul. That's just wonderful. That's
perfect in every way.
It's beautiful.
That is an accurate description of this movie.
It certainly is. All right, we're here for Torture Cinema. You all picked this movie, so you're welcome for the time and pain that we suffered. Although I should note, and this is a really important thing to note, that only three of us actually finished this movie. One of our number apparently could not finish the movie and had to be told which parts to watch before we did record this podcast. And I wonder of the four of us here who it was.
I'm sorry. I was helping my friend clean out her garage today and being like a good friend and, you know, battling Black Widow spiders, which was a lot more interesting than this movie.
Fair enough. Well, okay, so before we get started talking about the actual movie, we got to talk about what we're all drinking. So I will start with you, Julia. We didn't do our names, did we?
No.
Nope.
I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Rachel, the scum who did not finish the movie.
That's a rocky proposition.
Oh, puns. Because she's into rocks and stuff.
And now I'm by the Rockies.
Oh,
yep. Yeah. It's a twofer for my punny.
Double pun.
Are the rocks better in Colorado?
Everything's better in Colorado when you compare it to Texas.
Damn.
By the way, I never have to live in Texas again. I'm very excited about this.
Are you sure?
There's no fucking way you're going to make
it. Okay. All right, so let's get to what we're all drinking. So, Julia, what are you drinking?
I have a Pimm's Cup because it is summer.
Yes! Pimm's Cups are amazing!
I agree.
Okay. I guess that's it. So Paul, you're next.
It is summer, so I have a Killebrew Root Beer. Named for the longtime Minnesota Twin and Twin announcer Harmon Killebrew.
So is it just like a hard root beer?
No, it's just a regular root beer.
Oh, okay. Cool.
With a tasty old-fashioned flavor.
Awesome. Rachel, what about you?
And I am currently drinking a New Belgium Heavy Melon, which is a watermelon lime ale, because New Belgium Brewing Company has never steered me wrong, and it's quite tasty. But while I was watching the movie, the part of it I did watch, I was drinking a gin and tonic that was made with local gin. So,
ooh.
I'm like getting my Colorado on today.
Hell yeah. Awesome. Paul's just going to keep up with the rock buns all day. Yay, Paul.
It's cool. What he do.
It is what he do. That's true. So what I am drinking is what I am going to call today a Hoffman anesthetic. which some might just say whatever alcohol happened to be in my fridge mixed together with an Angry Orchard. But it's more accurately... two different kinds of rum. It's Oak Heart and whatever cheap crap I managed to get at the store the other day. It is the Kentucky Cider from Evan Williams, mixed with Angry Orchard and Amaretto. And I'm pretty sure this is going to put me out for the night, so...
We better record fast.
We better record fast, and I promise I will not have any scary dreams.
I was going to say, is it going to be a dreamless sleep, though?
I think if I drink six of these, all of my dreams for the next week will be gone. So, yeah. So on that note, we should probably describe this movie. and I want to torture somebody, but I won't because I realize asking Rachel to actually describe this movie, even though she hasn't finished it, would be unfair. So I won't do that.
But funny.
It would be funny, except anything you say will make less sense than the movie, which unfortunately is... That would actually
well,
be a
wait,
feat.
Wait, tell, no, I was going to say, tell you what. How about I describe it up to the point where I had to be given the synopsis by my most excellent co-hosts.
And then she'll do that part?
Yeah, and then someone else can take over. Julia, if you're feeling mean.
Right, I can do it. Yeah, sure.
Okay. All right, Rachel. Summarize up to the point at which you had to stop.
Okay. So this is about... Dustin Hoffman, who is a psychiatrist named Norman, who's kind of a shitbag, and he wrote a report for the government about how they were going to deal with contacting aliens. And then suddenly an alien spacecraft shows up really far under the water. So they grab Norman and everybody that he put in his report as being the ideal team for meeting aliens, even though he sort of pulled it out of his ass and apparently plagiarized a lot of science fiction authors. And they take them down under the sea, and there's a lot of like scientific mumbo jumbo bullshit, and it's Dustin Hoffman is Norman, Beth, who is Sharon Stone, who is Beth, some dude who plays a guy named Ted, poor Ted,
Leif Schreiber,
Ted, okay, whoever the fuck that is, and then Samuel L. Jackson, who is Harry. Who
I'm
is
sorry,
like,
he played Sabretooth in the Wolverine movie.
I didn't watch the Wolverine movie because okay. I'm so tired of Wolverine that it hurts.
He was in Defiance, but Daniel Craig.
Anyway. So they all go under the ocean and they go into the spaceship and discover that it's actually not an alien spaceship. It's a human spaceship from like God knows how long in the future, because apparently in the future, when you're putting dates into things, you only use the last two numbers unaccountably. And there was some event and now it's under the ocean and has been under there for 300 years. And there's like, apparently, whatever century this is from, they also have Blue Diamond Almonds still, which is an excellent product placement because they find a corpse that was eating Blue Diamond Almonds before he got murdered. And then they find this giant sphere that they're like, oh, the surface of it looks like it's made out of mercury, which is not true. And it's a perfect sphere. Like, apparently they're so brilliant they can tell it's a perfect sphere just by looking at it. Okay. And then everyone wants to know what's going on. And at some point, Harry, like, goes back to the ship and steps into the sphere, except he instead sort of, like, has a floaty image on the sphere and passes out. I don't know. And then weird stuff starts to happen. Queen Latifah gets eaten by jellyfish, which I found very upsetting. There is a giant squid that I will say no more about because that's going to be one of my dislikes. And, and they start getting, like, this code, like, spat at the ship, and they decode it in a really bullshit way, and it turns out that it's like the sphere talking to them, and his name is Jerry, and he's very happy and he wants to talk, and then he wants to kill them all because reasons. And that's basically where I had to stop, was after the giant squid attack, and because I ran out of time, because I assumed that this would be a normal movie that was like 90 minutes long, and instead it's like 135 minutes, which no movie has any business being.
What are you talking about? Like, most movies are 2 hours long now.
It's 2 hours and 15 minutes. It has that in common with things like, oh, what was the Kevin Costner one that we watched?
Waterworld.
The Postman is longer. It's like 18 hours.
The Postman is, I think the Postman is like 2.5 hours, so it's like 15 minutes longer than this one. But I feel like we've watched several movies that are pushing the 2 and 15.
Yeah. I mean, it's just way too long. Like, this thing should have been like maybe 90 minutes. I'm really offended by this as a screenwriting student.
I love the fact that like we had the scientist describe this, so she's just like super pissed off about all the bullshit science in this.
Oh, we're gonna get to that, Rachel.
I will pick up where Rachel left off to tell you how this movie ends.
Oh shit.
There are underlying tensions between all of the people, and they all have different secrets from their pasts and things that they're upset about. And they are worried about them all. And then it turns out, like, Harry thinks that they're all gonna die. That he had said that at the very beginning of the movie. He thinks like that since this spaceship is from the future and it's American, like, and it arrived in the past and the government doesn't realize that it's happening, that like they won't know about it, and there is no way that the future will record it. So therefore everybody on this mission is going to have to die underwater. So he's convinced they're all going to die. And Norman and Beth have this like complicated history where like she was suicidal and he's a psychiatrist, and also like they had a romantic fling, which was extremely inappropriate. And the military people are like super upset that Norman would suggest that Beth be on the mission because she's got a history of suicide attempts, and they're convinced that she is going to kill everybody. And then like Norman has a history of being afraid of jellyfish because he was stung by a bunch of them when he was a kid. And he's also claustrophobic, and he's afraid of not being able to breathe. And there's all this random bullshit that goes on. But all of these things come to a head when it turns out that, like, what is happening from the sphere is that all of their fears are coming true, and that it's Norman's fault that Queen Latifah got killed by jellyfish because he's afraid of jellyfish. And that, like, Harry was reading 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, and on page 87, there's a description of a giant squid, and it says what a fine monster that would make, and, like, suddenly there are manifestations of, like, tons of copies of this book, and they all only go up to page 87, which stops with that description. And then, like, all of these things keep happening that are literal manifestations of their fears, but eventually they figure that out, and it's just the three of them left because everyone else has died, and they somehow manage to get out just in time when Beth's detonation of explosives that she set up around the habitat for some reason go off, but like they just managed to escape that. And they get up to the surface and they're like, what are we going to do now that we're safe on the surface? What are we going to tell the military? Because it has to be something that we don't know is going to have happened. So we can't tell them the truth because we can't have them document it. And then Samuel L. Jackson is like, guys, the sphere can manifest anything, not just nightmares. We're just all terrible, so it only manifested nightmares for us. But what if we manifested the ability to forget everything? It would be like it never happened, and then we could all survive. Let's hold hands and do that. And they're all like, all right, we'll hold your hands.
Cue so they romantic hands. Music.
They hold hands. There's a swell of dramatic music. And
romantic music.
And then they all forget, and they're like, what, why are we holding hands? And Samuel Jackson's like, you were holding my hands. But they all, like, back away from each other, and the movie ends.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that basically covers what, I mean, I think that gets the utter, we should save this. The ending is going to be a thing we're all going to talk about, isn't
it? I have explained the basic plot of the movie in far more detail than it even deserves, but I have done that.
Honestly, your description makes more sense than the actual movie. So, kudos to you, Julia. A+.
Oh, such a great thing to be recognized for.
like, yeah.
My life accomplishments are done.
It's just like getting a PhD, you know. It's at the same level. You know, get a PhD in quantum physics, or be able to describe a shitty movie better than the movie actually is. Those are really important skills.
Right, so shall we get into likes and dislikes?
We should. We should probably start with likes, because I'm going to guess that our likes are going to be shitty, because we're going to have much rage.
I'm assuming we're going to get, like, what, two likes and two dislikes this episode?
We might. We will see where we are time-wise, depending on how much we rant.
let's keep it moving, guys.
Okay, so I'm going to start with Paul, since you two have already talked a whole bunch, and I'll let Paul start us off. So, Paul, your first like, sir.
I have to have likes for this movie, don't I?
Okay. Yes, okay. You do.
I do. Sad and tragic. Okay. So, the likes are a pretty thin reed in this movie, because this movie is terrible. I did like the design of the underwater habitat, particularly the kitchen. Somebody had a playful sense of humor, and it's even pointed out by Dustin Hoffman's character that the kitchen in the habitat looks like a 50s diner. And I thought, that's cute. Someone actually thought to not make something completely boring and utilitarian and gave that room some much needed character. And since we spend a fair amount of time in that room, especially with the climactic scene of the, of everything filled with the bad copies of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. It's a nice central room that we get a lot of use out of, and it looks better than just random corridors. Although I could believe that's a underwater habitat. It feels and looks good. So yeah, the set design of the crazy habitat they run around and keep dying in is, I like that part, bit of the cinematography. There's other parts I didn't like quite so much. I could rant about those, but we're being positive here, so I like the habitat, particularly the kitchen. I could see myself eating breakfast in there and looking outside at fake jellyfish.
And I would like to add that the MVP for the kitchen is the plate of muffins.
Oh, yes!
Yes.
They had muffins, they're cooking eggs. It's like, I could do that. I could be under the sea and study stuff and eat in that kitchen. Yeah.
Are you going to be like Sebastian? Are you going to sing?
No, I am not.
Under the sea.
No, don't make me crabby.
Oh, no.
He's not a crab. He's a lobster.
No, he is a crab.
He's a crab.
Oh, is he a crab?
Yes.
Oh. Yes.
I don't know, man. Little Mermaid's a weird movie.
But that's a better movie than this. Perhaps we should move along, though, to Julia.
All right. Yeah, so, like, I gotta say that my biggest like out of this movie is the thing that I had to freeze frame and take a picture of and post to Twitter, which got, like, all kinds of likes and retweets, which is the moment when Jerry is like, how did you like the giant squid? And there is a point when the screen just says, how did you like the giant squid? And I was like, okay, this is worth just, like, I literally took a picture of my television at that point and put it on Twitter. How did you like the giant squid? It turns out the internet also really likes this question.
It's a very relevant and important question.
I feel like we'll address that in dislikes.
Yes. Yeah, because I think one of us has already said they want to talk about the giant squid.
Yeah, I have some thoughts about the giant squid that don't belong in this particular section.
Julia did mention that it was just the reference to the giant squid on a computer screen.
I specifically like that moment that I freeze framed and took a picture of and posted to Twitter. Like, that did bring me joy. I liked that that existed. That there was a point when my screen just said, with no context, in a field of black with white text, how did you like the giant squid?
Yes.
I like that. That should be a meme.
How did you like the giant squid?
I think it might have just said, did you like the giant squid?
No, it's yeah, how I did think you it like the giant squid? How did you like the... Did you like the giant squid? Yeah. I just looked it up. Did you like the giant squid?
Yeah, there is a photographic record you can check.
Awesome.
Because I literally took a picture and posted it to Twitter. Like, I think later I was having a conversation. I feel like this also goes along with it, so I'm going to roll it in. When Sean was watching this movie, he was live tweeting and he was like, Samuel Jackson really likes eggs. I'm like, yeah, but you know what he doesn't like?
Squid.
And Sean was like, squid. He really doesn't like squid. And I was like, did you like the giant squid?
He really, really doesn't like squid in this movie. Like, he has like anaphylactic shock at the idea that he's eating calamari, and
they
he freaks out and leaves Stryver
choking
and
trying to give him the Heimlich maneuver.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm not joking, motherfucker. I just really hate squid.
He says asshole, but motherfucker would have been better.
I think Samuel L. Jackson should be like, have it in his contract that he gets to say motherfucker at least once a movie.
It should be a rule.
For real. Yes. That's definitely true.
To be fair, in this movie, he plays a character where, like, he normally doesn't get to play. Right? He plays kind of a dweeby mathematician a little bit.
He gets to play a character who is, like, intelligent and interesting and also, like, super weird. Because, like, he's, like, singing songs from South Pacific and raving about how much he likes eggs and... I feel like Samuel Jackson is the one person in this movie who's actually having fun with his role.
Yeah, I think that is fair. I don't think Dustin Hoffman stuttering or any of the other characters are really having fun. I'm sure Queen Latifah's day was not fun.
No.
I will I will talk later about characters I didn't think were having fun.
Yeah, we, okay, we'll get it.
Oh, good.
But I would like to note, since we were just on the Samuel L. Jackson topic, that it was a very unrealistic depiction of a mathematician in the sense that he was able to actually do simple addition and subtraction in his head.
Yeah. Well, okay, so who's the most unrealistic mathematician? Samuel Jackson in this movie or Jurassic Park's...
Is it Jeff Goldblum who's the mathematician?
No, he's not a mathematician. He's a
chaotician.
That's a branch of mathematics.
He's a chaotician.
See, I only know theoretical mathematicians, so I don't know. For all I know, maybe chaoticians are like the sad little rock stars of the mathematics world. I don't know.
I don't think Jeff Goldblum did any math in that movie. I think he just basically creepered on what's her name and just touched her hand a lot. Yeah, Laura Dern, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's all that point of that character was, is he's not a mathematician. He just says new agey science-y bullshit and touches women's hands.
Okay, so we're not here to talk about Jurassic Park, and I've done my like, so let's move on to Sean.
Fair enough. Okay, so my like. All of the likes that I have selected are all half-ass likes. So we're just going to have to go through one of these. So I'm going to pick... I'll pick the music. I like the music, but only if you took it out of the movie and listened to it by itself. Because anytime the music is played in the movie, it makes no sense, but on its own, it's very pretty. So I will give you the example of when it doesn't make sense in the movie, the scene that Julia talked about with the hands, when they're all holding hands, and the very romantic music that sounds like two people making love for the first time plays. It doesn't make sense in that context, but it is very beautiful music. So I enjoyed the music a lot. I just didn't think that whoever made the music had actually watched the movie when they made it, or they wouldn't have picked any of the choices that they came up with. Because no point does the music in this sound like music for a horror movie. It sounds like music for like a romantic drama.
Yeah, but they misidentify the Mozart piece, which annoyed.
Well, and Sam Jackson doesn't sing it either. He just sings some random notes.
Yeah, and he says, "Oh yeah, it's horn concerto in flat K447." It's not. It's horn concerto in D K412. I like Mozart. Maybe you didn't know that about listeners, but so yeah, it's like,
whew,
that's wrong.
I think Paul wins the nerd out award for this episode. That you actually knew that. Wow. A plus, Paul.
Random useless information on tap from Paul.
I will just say that it does actually really annoy me when a character identifies a piece of music and tries to sing along, but then sings something that has nothing to do with the music. Because that really breaks the character. It makes no sense. If you know what it is, then you know the melody. So you should be able to sing along with it.
Or at least fake it, yeah. Not
or at least
just
fake
random
it.
Notes.
Yeah, that's what he does. He just goes, da-da-da-da-da. And it's like, that's not what's playing right now. Like, literally, it's like piano playing right now, and you're doing, like, your violin impression. It's not working. Although, I will say, it makes Liv Schreiber very upset. Because he has his mini freak out on this up, so.
So, Rachel has her first like.
Rachel, first like, go for it.
So, my first like is very small, but I just really, really like the part where Jerry puts no on the screens, and then Dustin Hoffman goes, "Use your words, Jerry." It made me laugh so hard. It's like, Jerry is using his words. It's just one word.
Many times.
Many times.
Use your words, Jerry, yeah.
To be fair, though, that is exactly what you'd expect, right? When he says earlier, it's like we're dealing with a child. That's what you would say to a child, right? You would say, use your words.
Use your words.
Mm-hmm.
It just backfires horrendously.
Yes.
Dustin Hoffman's character throughout this movie just
He's
seems...
He's basically the worst psychiatrist in the world.
He really is. He.
Sadly, that is not true. But
okay, well, okay, fair enough. So maybe a little hyperbolic, but... But he does do many things that don't sound
very... He is just a giant dirtbag, though.
Oh, God, he's so gross.
Oh, God, yes. But he apologizes at the end, so everything's okay.
That's my opinion.
Hopefully people picked up the sarcasm. Because, yeah, definitely don't think everything's okay, Mr. Guy, who spends half the time in the middle of the movie basically trying to convince the one woman who used to have a psychiatric issue that she's also still crazy. When she's not. They're all crazy. They've all lost their damn minds. But mostly Dustin Hoffman, who I was convinced from the start was already, like, whoop, something had clicked off. Because his character doesn't seem all there. But maybe that's just... So I think we're done. We should go to dislikes.
That's like...
All right.
All right, dislikes.
Paul. Oh, this is such a target-rich environment. Where do I go? Where do I go? Where do I go? Okay, I will go with the simple logic of they're fine. So okay, so you found this spaceship at the bottom of the ocean. So you get this guy who wrote the paper on first contact and follow his advice to the letter. That's fine. The government can be a horrendous bureaucracy. That's fine. So you get down there, and so you find the spaceship, you go inside, you find it's an American spaceship from the future, and you find the sphere, and then you, to the exclusion of everything else, you're obsessed with the sphere. Hello, you have a American spaceship from the future, you think any decent contact team, even if they're not the right ones, would be going back into the spaceship and exploring and studying the damn spaceship. You have a spaceship there! What the hell? You have this weird sphere object. Why aren't you studying the technology spaceship? Maybe you can find some history. Maybe you can even change the future. Oh God, the Samuel Jackson. Oh, we can't change the future. We never got up here because it was never in history books. I wanted to throw things at the screen for his misunderstanding of time paradoxes. You have a buried spaceship that's been sitting there for 300 years from an indeterminate point in the future. You might as well take it apart and study the damn thing. Sorry.
Use your words, Paul.
I did use a lot of words. But yeah.
Yeah.
And Dustin Hoffman's character has obviously read science fiction because he cribbed some of his report from Isaac Asimov. And he doesn't even think, hey, maybe we should study the spaceship too. Yeah, you have this weird ass sphere. Fine, you have a whole gigantic rest of the spaceship. And it's American, so it's going to be comprehensible. Why not study it? Hello?
So I gotta add a lot to this, Paul, because sort of one of my likes, and it's not gonna be my like now, was that I liked, like, the initial premise where they find this ship, it turns out to be this American ship from the future, and that idea was like, whoa, that's kind of cool, right? Like, exactly what you're saying, right? I thought they would explore the ship, it would be an interesting experience, but then they sort of drop that completely, and... like, things after that just get increasingly nonsensical as they go, right? I mean, it's only after that point that we learn that Dustin Hoffman's character has, like, made up most of the report, right? Because he confesses to Sam Jackson for reasons. And everything after that just seems so just poorly put together. I mean, even the moment when, like, the commander guy, right? He says, hey, we found this thing. Oh, by the way, clearly the ship was designed to go find the sphere. Or find random things in space and bring them back. I'm like, how the fuck did you determine that? There was no scene to show us. Like, the only scene where we actually see anything that gives us information is actually the scene with Stone and Hoffman who see that unknown event, right? Without the date and time, where they basically determine, as we would all determine, they went through some sort of weird black hole and ended up in the ocean somehow. We don't know exactly how, but at least that gave us information. But then this commander's like, yeah, this ship was designed to... How? How the fuck did you determine that? Where did you read that? Where was the manual that said, here is the design of the ship and what it's for? There was no information. It was just sort of like, we're just going to make up a bunch of bullshit as we go along. And you're right, completely, that there's the sphere, but it's a fucking mile-long ship.
And it's got power. They can get information out of it. I usually pulling out every single... bit of info out of the databanks you can. It's compatible. You were able to use the thing. How stupid are you? Maybe you can even figure out what the sphere is.
Yeah, there's absolutely it was frustrating because, especially since they were able to pull up the random thing that, I mean, they looked at it and they said, oh, obviously it fell into a black hole. And I was like, where the fuck are you getting this?
Because they saw it.
Yeah. I don't know. But it was just like...
It seemed like there should have been a conversation about that.
Yeah, they should have been able to pull everything out of this the ship's computer, since they obviously were able to find something already. So they at least could have been like, oh, hey, this is what the crew was doing. And this was their mission. And, you know, why did one guy get his head bashed in? Or, you know, you'd think they would have investigated that. But instead they were like, okay, it's a ship. Let's go back home.
Yeah.
The end.
They dropped the ball. There was such an interesting story to be had there, right? That could even, I mean, I basically compared on Twitter, right, that this is sort of like Event Horizon, but Event Horizon was more interesting.
I love Event Horizon.
A lot of people don't like Event Horizon, and I understand why they don't like it. There's a lot of things that are problematic about that film. But it actually follows through with its premise. They go to the ship, which has suddenly magically appeared, and they actually explore the ship. They do. They go into it and they see like, oh, there's some crazy shit that went on. This one is sort of like, hey, there's this fascinating ship. Let's spend most of the movie not even addressing the ship.
Yeah, we do. We stay in the base and deal with our psychological fears. Yeah.
Which would make more sense if that was something revealed in the process of examining the ship and its records. If that was sort of the clue, like maybe some of the clues were coming from the ship's records. Like weird cryptic messages left in there that they couldn't figure out exactly what they meant, right? Something like that. That would have been, it would have sort of tried to piece things together, but it was sort of like two different movies. One was this sort of discovery narrative, and the other was like people stuck in a claustrophobic thing going crazy. And it just, yeah, it's two different movies, basically. One that's interesting and one that's not so much.
It's kind of like a mixture of, I know it's before any of them, Event Horizon and Sunshine, which starts off as this nice space movie and turns into a slasher film, and a bit of Solaris and a dollop of the Abyss. And it's not as good as any of those movies by a long shot.
Yeah, it's definitely not as good as the Abyss.
Oh, the Abyss is so good. It's such a better C movie. God, man, I want to watch the Abyss. Why couldn't somebody pick that for torture cinema?
Because it wouldn't be torture.
It wouldn't have been torture.
It's not a terrible movie.
I know, that's fair. Yeah. Well, anyway. All right, well, we should jump on to Julia.
All right. So, okay. I guess, are we going for the two likes and two dislikes, or do I just have one shot?
Let's assume we're going for the two, and our second one will be us all ranting about the ending.
Well, okay, my second one's not going to be exactly that, but I'm sure we will all rant at the ending at some point. Like, whoever brings up the ending, we're all going to rant about that. My second dislike is going to be different. My second like and dislike are going to be related, so I'm not going to go into them right now.
Fair enough.
I will say dislike. I'm going to go into the meta structure of this. And so in the 90s, Michael Crichton films were like a giant thing because Jurassic Park was so popular and performed so well that it was like Michael Crichton can do no wrong. Let's adapt everything. So there was like Rising Sun, Jurassic Park, Disclosure, Congo, Sphere, The 13th Warrior, Timeline. Like all of those were Michael Crichton movies, adaptations that were made in the 90s. And Sphere was, you know, it was a little late in the game. It was 98, so it was 5 years after Jurassic Park. I was amazed because I remember like as a kid when I was a early teen and on into like a little bit of my high school career, I was reading a lot of Michael Crichton novels because I like started with Jurassic Park and was like, oh, this is amazing. And then I read a bunch of them. And I dimly remember reading Sphere during this period. I didn't remember most of the plot. Like I actually had it confused with Congo. So I was confused when they were like going into war. I was like, wait, doesn't this have gorillas? And I was like, oh no, wait, that's the other one. And then I was like, right, there's like underwater and like Dustin Hoffman and Sharon Stone like have some sort of weird romantic thing going, I guess. Yeah, I vaguely remember this. But the weird thing about it was that watching this, I could see that this was definitely an adaptation of a Michael Crichton novel. And in some ways, very, very faithful to the Michael Crichton book. And I say that not having actually read this book in probably 25 years. But like also just like it had chapter headings. It literally had chapter headings. And it did like, I would be willing to bet that it scraped a lot of the really clunky dialogue straight from the text of the novel. It basically did a lot of the things that I expect out of a Michael Crichton novel that are not the things that make Michael Crichton novels so intensely readable. Because I remember being super gripped by Michael Crichton novels. Like, I would just read and read and read them. And this was like one area where my grandfather and I could connect because he and I were very different, but like his reading tastes were pretty much just like, political thrillers and like he also enjoyed Michael Crichton. So like he would give me Michael Crichton novels as gifts. I remember he gave me a hardcover copy of Timeline when it was new as a Christmas or birthday present. And that was like the one place where he would be like, yeah, let me know what you think. And we'd like discuss these books. And I remember like I would read these books and I would be totally like, I cannot put this down. I need to know what happens. This movie was not like that. This movie was like all the things that Michael Crichton does in his novels that you find kind of clunky, but you put up with in order to get that gripping story without the actually gripping story. And like the books are very hand wavy on the science. Like if you poke it, it falls apart pretty quick, but it does enough convincingly interesting stuff with it that you're like, what if that could be true? I'm going to think about it. The movie did not at all. Even a little bit. And so it was like fascinating how like it was full of just like wooden dialogue, chapter headings. It was all the bad experiences of reading a novel and none of the good ones. And that's terrible and sad. And I dislike that.
I would like to just add that I was actually taking some notes. I'm going to finish the movie just so I can finish my notes and post them later. But the chapter headings infuriated me so much because there was no point to them. They were clunky. I hated the font that the supertitles were in. It was worse than the font in Captain America Civil War.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Rachel. Preach.
God,
it's
I was
so
like,
true, though. It is true. Everything Rachel is saying is true.
They're terrible. I'm like, why are, you know, blank screen and taken up with this whole chapter title? I'm like, and there was no need to have that break. It's oh God, it just, editing wise, it made me so angry. I hated it so much.
And I thought, what was the point? What were they thinking? Are they expecting the viewers not to be able to follow the plot enough that they need to be told what the next chapter is?
Well, and I mean, especially I had that Captain America Civil War vibe when the first heading is The Surface. And I was like, no shit.
Really?
The ship or whatever. Like, really?
So, Paul, the answer to your question is yes, because this movie is so boring that they had to assume part of their audience had fallen asleep. So the headings are there to let us know that this movie's still happening. And
I firmly believe the headings are there because whoever made this movie really wanted to do a straight-up adaptation of this novel. And, like, I don't know if they were a fan. I don't know what the deal is. I just know that, like, Michael Crichton didn't direct this or do the screenwriting, and it shows.
Yep.
But was he renowned for being good at writing and directing?
Oh, he did a bunch of screenwriting and directing. He was the responsible for the show ER.
Yeah.
And he also did Westworld.
And Jurassic Park.
ER as a show.
Well,
is
Spielberg directed
phenomenal.
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, but, you know, Michael Crichton was very good at screenwriting.
Yeah, he was well known for that. He had a giant career in it.
Okay, I will believe you.
Yeah. And like all the movies that he actually had a hand in, and he did have a big hand in Jurassic Park, were much more like, oh, okay, this is like a reasonably paced movie that like made by people who know what they're doing.
Well, yeah, because Jurassic Park's a great example. It doesn't follow the book entirely. It makes the adaptation as it needs to.
Right.
It's a great
and
film on its own.
I'm sure that if Michael Crichton had actually made Sphere, he would have, like, probably focused on different things and made the pacing tighter. And he knew what he was doing with that. And he knew how to adapt a novel into a screenplay without, like, feeling like you had to do everything directly. Like, I think the thing is, Wikipedia says that this book is actually very, very close to the movie. Like, there are only slight differences plot-wise. And I think that, like, probably the book is still way more fun to read, but, like, also that it seems to support the idea that whoever made this was like, I want to be exactly true to this book, and I don't really know how to make a good movie while doing that. Which is why you get bullshit chapter headings and very bad pacing and, like, just terrible dialogue and ugh.
That's a problem with a lot of, like, anytime you try to keep too close to the source material, I mean, most often you end up, it just falls apart. Because the source material can't translate.
Yeah.
Right? So, I haven't read Sphere, so I know nothing about the book. But my guess is in the book, it works really well because you can really dig into the characters' mindsets. So a lot of the stuff that's sort of psychological, we're actually seeing it happening in real time within the book. In this movie, we don't get to see that, right? We have to kind of deal with what they tell us in dialogue or brief scenes where we see them having, you know, psychotic breaks.
And I mean, like, one of the hallmarks of a Michael Crichton novel is that there are multiple POV sequences where you get deep into a third-person narrative about a specific character and you learn, like, their backstory. But also, like, at the same time, the other thing that makes them so readable is that there are these large info dump sections about hand-wavium science fiction stuff that it, like I said, it does not work if you poke it, but it's in, he talks about it in an interesting enough way that you're like, but what if?
That's interesting.
I mean, and I've this read, did not come through in this movie. Like, I think that the stuff about the sphere and the idea behind that, like, he started to write this in 1967 and didn't finish it, and it wasn't published until 1987. Because he, like, stopped and was like, I don't know what to do with this. Because he was like, I was trying to make a first contact story, but I didn't want it to be about aliens who are basically human. And so, like, how do you make something truly alien was what he was trying to explore. And that's where this sphere idea comes from. Like, it's an alien and it is not anything like what we know.
Yeah, and that's an interesting... That's an interesting concept. Like,
I'm sure that's actually a much more interesting exploration within the novel because he's good at talking about things and being, like, off the cuff interesting about them. Like I said, I remember reading, and actually I'm sure I, like, tore through this book as a teenager and was, like, super into it. The movie does not get any of that.
No, it really doesn't. It's a special movie in terms of that, yeah.
But speaking of special, what's your first dislike, Sean?
Oh boy, you all ready for this? This is where you bust out that Space Jam song.
Womp, 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 womp.
Yeah, just waiting for...
We're all ready for this. Just go. Okay,
so I'm about to go on a rant about some science shit. Because there's a moment in this movie where I stopped and I went, that is fucking bullshit, you lying sack of shit. And I stopped the movie and I went to double check by doing a bit of Google searching just to make sure I was 100% right, just in case I was wrong. But I was right 100%. And that is the moment when the Sharon Stone character tells us that the sea snakes are Belcher sea snakes when they're fucking not. And it made me so mad because I watched this. She's supposed to be a biologist, so she's supposed to know what the fuck she's talking about. Right. And earlier in the movie, she's like, oh, this is not like a jellyfish that exists. Bullshit. You're a lying sack of shit. I know it's a real jellyfish. Well, it's obviously fake for the movie, but it's based on a real jellyfish. You're a lying sack of shit. I don't know how you determine that, but the snakes. We got to go back to the snakes. So there's a scene where Dustin Hoffman's character has, like, a freak out because these snakes come out of nowhere and they, like, attack him and he, like, freaks out. It's unclear whether they actually attack him or he's just, like, having, like, I don't really know what's going on. He's just screaming a lot. For like 12 minutes in the movie.
I was just saying, can we have just a moment, though, for how glorious it was to watch Dustin Hoffman writhe around on the floor with an obviously, like, fake plastic thing under his shirt that he was just sort of wiggling back and forth?
Yeah, going, help me, for 15 minutes.
Yes.
He, like, 15 minutes of this 2 hours and 15 minute movie is Dustin Hoffman screaming. And the other 45 minutes are Dustin Hoffman stuttering lines. So, but anyway, back to the sea snakes. So, right, so Sharon Stone character comes in, and, like, she grabs the snakes out of the water, right? And they're obviously not snakes, because they look like weird, like, demonic, creepy eel demon, right? And she grabs them and she's like, what's the deal, yo? They're just Belcher sea snakes. They're only active at night and they don't bite. And my first response was, you are fucking lying piece of shit. You don't know what you're talking about. And she follows it up with the knowledge of they're the most venomous snake in the entire world, which I also know is fucking bullshit because the inland taipan is the most venomous snake in the entire world. And that shit is in fucking Australia. And that shit, yes. You don't fuck with. It's called the fear snake for a reason because it fucks your shit up. It can kill like 150,000 mice with one injection. That's how fucking thing. Anyway, right. So I went and I was like double checking my shit. And I was like, yeah, I know that wasn't a thing because guess what? The Belcher sea snake is also called the fair banded sea snake. And if you paid attention, that snake has no fucking bands. So it is not a sea snake. It is a demonic eel creepy demon thing. It's some shit out of like a hentai movie. I don't know what it is, but it's not a fucking sea snake. And I got so mad because that moment was like any little kernel of like suspension of disbelief that I had left, like just out. It was gone at that point because I was like, I can't even believe that the biologist knows what the fuck she's talking about. Like where, like I'm now convinced at this point that somehow Sharon Stone's character got a biology degree through reasons that didn't involve going to school. Like, she got that shit, like, she went on, like one of those boats that went out into international waters, and they just, like, she paid, like, $50, and she got a degree. That's how she got her biology degree. Because there's no way she's a biologist, and she knows what she's talking about. She's a lying sack of shit. And, it's not even the most venomous sea snake, by the way. That's the Du Bois sea snake. That's more venomous than this shit. And the Belcher sea snake is known for not biting very much, because they're non-aggressive.
I would just like to note how beautiful it is to hear Sean rant like this, because it's like listening to me talk about Dante's Peak.
We haven't done that one yet, have we?
No. Oh my gosh, that's a terrible movie. We should totally put it on the list.
Rachel has to be there for that one, because she's going to have some rock shit to complain about.
I've just tweeted that about you, Sean, because it was beautiful.
Yeah, that was just like the angry herpetologist. Like,
now as we record Torture Cinema, at Sean Duke is ranting about the marine biologist who knows nothing about sea snakes. Nothing, he tells us.
Well, and there are no deep sea snakes. They don't exist.
Well, and I do want to, because you mentioned the jellyfish thing. That honestly really bothered me just because she was like, these are like no jellyfish that exist. And I'm like, how? Tell us why.
Show us something. Like, yeah. You put the scales, like the little bits under a microscope or something. Like,
yeah, she has no science.
She had like zero idea of how to even tell that. And like, also, am I wrong or is it true that like at the bottom of the ocean, there are all kinds of things that we have no idea what they even are because we haven't discovered them because it's the bottom of the ocean. It's really hard to know what's down there.
Especially around deep sea vents.
The bottom of the
ocean's
a fucking crazy land. If you look at the critters that live down there, they're fucking nightmare creatures.
Yeah, like, I would totally believe that there are jellyfish we just haven't actually cataloged yet.
The weird, like, you remember when Dustin Hoffman gets attacked by that, like, eel, like, teethy monster thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that looks very similar to a lot of weird, creepy shit that lives at the bottom of the ocean. Where they have, like crazy
smokers.
Teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know if it's modeled after anything that actually does exist down there. I didn't look very deep, but it was definitely not a sea snake.
I mean, the jaw on it looks like kind of like
an anglerfish.
Yeah, like an anglerfish.
Yeah, it looks like some creepy shit. Why didn't they just go with that? Just change it. It doesn't have to be a sea snake.
And especially not a sea snake that someone with knowledge of herpetology such as yourself can say, no, that's not true. Yeah. I
also just want to note that, like, all of this information, they could have easily just asked somebody. They could have just called up a university, like University of Florida, and been like, what up, yo? We need to know some information about sea snakes. What do I need to know? They could have just done that. And it's clear they didn't even fucking do that. They just let's just make something that looks like a demonic hentai eel. And that's what we're going to go with.
The desire to get the science wrong. I mean, I have an unused degree in biology. Sea snakes weren't anything I studied, though, so I didn't pick up on that. Although, I was already pissed off at the scientist movie when the astrophysicist talks about, oxygen is a corrosive gas in the same family as fluorine and chlorine. I'm thinking, no, you idiot! It is not!
God! Have you, The periodic table of elements. Yes. Do you read it?
No, he doesn't.
Jesus.
I know. I wanted to scratch my eyes.
I feel like that might be my quote of the night. But we should move on. So, Rachel, tell us your dislike.
Well, allow me to just read you a quote from the notes that I've taken so far, which is, "No, Jerry, I didn't like the squid because I didn't fucking see it."
Yeah.
I'm so mad about that. Like, you know, we
you sort of see it.
Well, you get, like, the freaking blurry sonar, which I love because everyone's just like, oh, there's a thing happening. What's this giant shape on the sonar that we're just ignoring?
Well, there is a scene. There is, like, one brief moment where you see it go across a window, but you only see, like its ball sack go across.
Well, and that's the other thing. So they're like, there's a thing going on, and then it just shits eggs everywhere. Like, what is even, like, I'm pretty sure that's not how squids attack.
Not to mention, like, that, like, Hoffman spends the whole scene, like, going, what are these? What are these? And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? We all know they're eggs. Like, it doesn't take a genius, dude.
Yeah.
You don't need a MacArthur genius grant to figure this out.
And I'm sorry, as far as the giant squid attack scene goes, there was a better giant squid attack scene in fucking Red Dwarf.
Yes. True.
Ouch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even the scene in frickin' Waterworld is better.
Yeah. So, I'm just like, I'm so, like, mad about the giant squid scene where I'm like, what, did we just not have a budget for a giant squid? Did we blow our budget on the graphics that's totally a black hole? Okay. I just, and then it just went on forever. Ever. It's so long and so boring and like, you know, oh, and then electrify the thing. No, don't electrify the thing. You're crazy. I hated that entire giant squid sequence. I was just, I hated it. It went on forever. It was dumb. And we never even got to see the giant squid except giant squid eggs. So fuck this movie.
So many eggs. And then they just magically disappear.
Yeah. Just, you know, oh, like, I guess the squid got really shocked and like, you know, it's like when you sneeze and hiccup at the same time and pee a little bit, but it was eggs.
Like, I'm just imagining.
So, like, to be fair with the disappearing thing, everything that is a manifestation of a fear disappears when, like, its fear manifestation is over.
I know, but
so that's clearly like actually a plot relevant disappearance that shows us that it's not actually a quote real giant squid, although it's real enough that it could have killed them.
So can I just say that if anyone is listening to this podcast right now who likes to draw like cute little things, if you would draw a squid being scared and shitting out eggs for us, that would make me so happy.
Yes.
That would be the cutest fucking thing in the world. I will put it on a t-shirt and I will freaking wear that shit at a con. That would make me so happy. So if you're listening and you do that, please do it.
All right, so let's move on to likes.
Okay.
All right, Paul, go for it.
My second and final like. Do I have... okay, I do have a second like, and that's although it's completely wasted in this entire movie, I kind of like how the team got picked and why they all know each other. I kind of like the conceit that Dustin Hoffman's character Norman basically made up half of this paper to get $35,000, which was big money back then, I guess. And so as a result, he half-assed it and just named people he knew to this thing. So, of course, when they actually have a real first contact scenario, they take him at his word. And that's why we don't have to spend 20 minutes of getting to know you stuff from the characters, because they already all know each other. We have the two, soon to die technicians, including Queen Latifah. I don't recall who the other one was played of, but I do know it was a woman, which was nice, but not that either of them got to do much. So at least the three core characters they know each other. They've spent time with each other. We don't have to build those relationships because they've already been baked in because of the conceit of
Norman half-assing this paper. I kind of like that idea. They're like, okay, they brought them together. We know each other. We can just go and have a great exploring adventure inside the alien spaceship, right? Right? Right?
We wish.
We wish. Wow. I really silenced everybody.
Sorry, so I was tweeting about squid eggs.
About squid eggs are more interesting than me talking about the plot.
I'm sorry. Well, it's not you talking about the plot, Paul. It's the plot.
I was just being quiet, as is my wont, so I could let you talk.
Okay. So that was my like. The conceit that they all know each other for a fairly good reason, because Norman's an idiot. And cheated on this paper.
Yeah, an idiot.
It's reasonable. I like that it does cut a lot of the let's get the team together character building. Because can you imagine this movie would be 3.5 hours if we had to do that?
Oh, dear God.
Good God.
It'd be like Prometheus Under the Ocean.
Oh, Jesus. God. Oh, sweet Jesus.
There would have just been so many awkward scenes of them getting to know each other.
Yeah.
Oh, Christ. And there'd be like a Stanley Tucci scene. Like in Core, where he is announcing his memoirs at the end. That's a good scene! Oh no, that scene's ridiculous.
That's a great scene, and we're going off into other movies. Can you tell listeners we hated this so much we're talking about anything but this movie?
Alright, I'm gonna move on to my second life.
Go, Julia, go!
We're moving through this. We gotta get this done. So, my second like is that it kind of comes up a little bit. Paul talked a little bit about this. There are actually a fair number of women in this movie, and they're not just randomly sexual objects, which is nice. And there are also a fair number of people of color in this movie, so that's kind of cool. Like, Samuel Jackson is awesome as usual and actually survives to the end, so that's always exciting. And, Sharon Stone is one of the main characters and is a scientist. And like, if we ignore the fact that none of these people know anything about the things that they're supposed to be experts in, and pretend that in this world where the rules are entirely different, they actually are experts. She is actually an expert in marine biology. And that's cool. Like, we just have that. And we also have, Queen Latifah, who is Alice Teeny Fletcher, the Navy engineer. And she is basically like the one who's dispatching them out in their pressure suits and maintaining the habitat. And she seems to be good at her job. And when she gets killed by jellyfish, it's because she's going outside to fix something, which is awesome because that's something she's prepared to do and she's cool. There's also at least one other that we see that is a woman, and I forget who she is and what her role is, but it's cool. It's good to know that there are a bunch of women, and it's nice because this is such a very close to the novel adaptation. I looked up the novel on Wikipedia to see what the differences were. There really aren't that many differences. And one of the things that stood out to me was that the cast of the novel is very similar to the cast of the movie, including the fact that Samuel Jackson's character in the novel is also an African American, and that there are actually even more women, because there's Sharon Stone's character, there's Queen Latifah's character, and then there are three other women down there on the habitat in the novel. So it's nice that there's a good balance of men and women and people of color and so forth. That's my like.
Yeah, that I think that's a perfectly fair like.
I saw that as I was watching the movie and I'm thinking, yep, Julie's going to talk about this, so. Yeah, so that's why I didn't pick it as one of my likes, because I knew that was your ball, and I was not going to steal your ball.
Paul. Is this the most diverse torture cinema movie we've done?
Oh, God.
I don't know, it might
Except
be.
Except for Last Airbender. Last Airbender, but I don't consider that a diverse film.
It might be, I don't know. But it's definitely, it's got pretty good gender parity and people of color representation, which is nice. As in more than one. But then we'll talk about things I didn't like later, so.
I do feel that it may be the most least offensively diverse. Because, I think, we've had some films where they have diversity, but it's sort of, really shitty done diversity. So, Last Airbender is, the worst offender I think we've ever done in this show. But this film, I felt like they did a relatively good job. Maybe that's just just me and my alcoholic version of
like,
events.
I agree. Like, I agree with the fact that basically they had a bunch of people of color and they were just regular people, which is nice. It wasn't like they were not being token parts. Samuel Jackson had weird quirks, but they were not related to the fact that he wasn't white.
Right. They were just kind of, he was kind of a weird dude.
He was a weird dude, and he would have been a weird dude no matter what he looked like. He was just going to be a weird dude.
I will say that I kind of wish that Queen Latifah's character had a little bit more time so that we could kind of get to know her a little more.
Yeah, like, but let's save that.
Okay. I'm sorry. Okay, fair enough.
So let's move on to your next like, Sean.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so my next like, I kind of did two of my likes already, so I'm just going to do the one that probably just going to make people hate me. And that's okay. And that is that there were actual books in this movie.
Why would we hate that?
Because it's not really a like. I did not enjoy this movie. It was so boring. But I did like that they actually had physical books in the movie. And they were of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which is a fun book.
And it's
but only
relevant.
Up to 87.
Yep.
Yeah, only up to 87, which is an unfortunate thing. Which is what happens when you pirate books. You only get part of it. But what are you going to do? Yeah.
Would you steal a handbag?
No, because I don't need a handbag.
Would you steal a car?
I already
then you should not pirate movies, Sean.
Oh, one of those commercials.
Oh, God. Do you remember how hokey those were? They were so just ridiculous. Oh, sad. I should note that I had to watch this via other means because the day I decided to watch Sphere was the day they took down Sphere from Netflix.
Yeah, I know.
It was not on Netflix. I paid for it, like I do for every torture cinema thing when I can't find it.
It was on Netflix when I told you guys about it, that was the movie we were doing. It was on Netflix.
I watched it on Friday night. And it was not there, and I paid for it from Amazon. So, like,
and so did I.
I'm really sorry.
Because I'm actually ethical. I paid for this thing.
Yeah, I paid my $4 to see it. And
yeah, there's no way you will get me to pay $4.
That's why I'm going to watch this motherfucker to the end, because I paid my $4 for it.
Except you didn't.
And you can get a blog post out of it. Curse it the entire time, Rachel.
Well, especially now that I know what's coming, I'm just really, like, but fine, I'm going to take kind of slightly tipsy notes, and then I'll scan them and put them on my Patreon, so it'll be fine.
So I should note that I have actually seen this movie probably maybe 20 times.
Why?
Hold your horses, let me explain. So, in my younger years, my grandma had Stars, and Stars, as people who have that may know, will play, like, the same 5 movies for, like, 3 months. And so when I'd get home and I couldn't watch, you know, Cartoon Network because they didn't have Gundam Wing on, I would have to watch whatever was on Stars. And so sometimes it would be Sphere and other times it would be other movies. But yeah, so I may have seen Sphere, like pieces of Sphere enough times that I've seen the movie at least 20 times.
Oh,
and that is why you are the way you are.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome, citizen.
So I feel like not paying to see it this time, I think, is okay. Because I have seen it enough.
Okay, moving on to Rachel's
Oh,
God. I mean, at least until you find out how stupid everything is, Jerry's actually pretty creepy. And I actually really liked the interactions that they had with Jerry to begin with, and like the part where, you know, they're like, oh, well, let's have a discussion about how we're going to deal with this. And then on the screen, Jerry's like, I can hear you. I actually really enjoyed that. And for about 5 minutes, it was nicely, like, sci-fi creepy. And then it just got really stupid.
Yeah, I'll completely agree with you. I mean, once revelations start happening, it really falls apart rapidly. But for a little bit, it's like, okay, this is creepy. Is Jerry this AI inside the sphere? Is it in the ship or what? And then we find out, and like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But he's creepy for a little while. And I think about when he stops being creepy is after the really awesome Jerry use your words scene. And then it just gets dumb. Or maybe it's the how did you like the squid? After that, he stops being creepy. But up until that point, he's pretty cool.
Well, that's because that, up to that point, we still think he might be an alien.
That's true.
Yeah, and after that point, we're like, wait a minute. Well, there are a couple scenes that kind of give us the impression, right? Because they'll do the thing where, like, weird stuff's happening outside, and then they'll pan in on Sam Jackson. And
yeah, it's like, sleeping.
Yeah, yeah. We now know, like, it's going to take 8 hours for them to figure it out, right? And so next week, we'll get the episode where that takes place, but we all know what's going on.
With a chapter heading.
With a chapter heading.
With a chapter heading.
That says Dennis Hoffman stutters through his lines to figure this out.
Dustin yeah. Hoffman.
The thing is, Sean, I don't know how many Dustin Hoffman movies you watch, but that's basically his line delivery method.
See, I get that that is the case, and that works in Rain Man, but when you have a movie that should be an hour and a half, but it takes 2 hours because he can't say his lines.
Well, and I mean, okay, I'll admit, I actually really like the movie Outbreak, even though it is absolutely terrible. But that's basically how he talks in Outbreak as well. That's just Dustin Hoffman.
He talks about every movie.
See, the only movies I like him in are Rain Man and Meet the Fockers. That's the only Dustin Hoffman I like. I'm probably a terrible person, aren't we? Should I say Ishtar?
Oh my god!
Luckily, Sean, that's not a science fiction movie.
Let's move on to our second dislike.
All right, Paul, second dislike, go.
Oh, where to go? Where? Wait a minute. Second dislike. Oh, right.
It's the final dislike.
It's the final dislike. Da-da-da-da.
Okay, let's cut it short and actually do it. We don't have time. Move
do
on.
It, Paul. Come on, go.
Okay.
Are you gonna do the ending?
Right. No, I'm not gonna do the I'm not gonna do the ending. I'm going to do, because Rachel's inspired to me, the revelation of this mistaken transcription of the characters and how stupid that is. Because so apparently, listeners, if you haven't already been spoiled by this movie, so it's fact that Jerry is not Jerry because there was a transcription error in trying to translate the binary code of the numbers, and it's wrapping keyboards around a sphere. What the heck was that supposed to be all about? So, but instead of being Jerry, it's actually Harry. And this, which is fine to think about this for all 5 milliseconds, you realize, okay, so if those letters were wrong, then other letters would be wrong, and so it would be all unintelligible. You couldn't just have those two letters, and because there's other words he talks about which have H's and A's and G's and E's in them, so they would all be messed up as well. It wouldn't just be the one word Jerry to Harry. So it makes
exactly
absolutely no sense.
Well, especially just the very statement he was looking at, my name is Jerry. The word name has an A and an E in it.
Thank you!
If you had to it would have been like, my Nima is Harry.
Exactly.
Yeah, that when that happened, I was just like, oh, give me a fucking break, Dustin Hoffman.
Yeah.
But maybe that was the reality altering powers. I don't know. That was just that I was just like, really? Are you fucking serious?
Yeah, we get to see Dustin Hoffman do cryptography, which is the most exciting and riveting thing I've ever seen on any episode of Touch of Cinema. But yeah, it's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. It's a stupid reveal. It's bad, bad plotting.
It's bad, and this movie should feel bad.
Yes. Okay, Julia.
All right. Your turn. So the flip side of being excited about the fact there were so many women and people of color in this movie is that the first person to die is Queen Latifah. Why? She's actually awesome, and she is Queen Latifah. Why does she die from stupid jellyfish? And so early on, and it's the first, of course, the first person to die is
a woman of color.
A woman of color. So it's like double whammy. It's horrible. Anyway, I super pissed off that we didn't get her for longer because she's actually cool. Also, like, it's cool that they have women in competent positions, but it's also very clear that this is not a movie written by women or people who actually understand women as people. I think this is actually a sad truth about Michael Crichton, which I did not recognize as a teenager and now am realizing was probably a common theme throughout all of his books. I feel like I feel like maybe Michael Crichton had like the idea that he wanted to be progressive and have like strong female characters, but also didn't really. He was married 5 times.
Oh,
okay. Wow. So like his personal history with women, not so hot. And I think that kind of shows in the women characters that he creates, where he has a hard time actually like really giving women respect. So Sharon Stone, like, I was super annoyed with Sharon Stone's acting, because like she delivers lines so flatly. Like, she's like, the most venomous animals in the world live under this ocean.
No, they don't. You liar.
And you're like, why are you talking like this? Like, you're not interested in, like, coral grows at about 1 inch a year. It's reliable. You could set your watch by it.
That's also yeah. not true.
And like, but like, the whole reason she's saying that is to establish that the spaceship has been under the sea for 350 years, but also it's a spaceship from the future, so what? Which you would think that, like, she would find this super weird and disconcerting and creepy, or interesting in a nerdy way, or something, but no, it's just, like, flat, affectless delivery. So at first I was super annoyed by this, but then I realized that, like, she's probably just super pissed off at the lot her character is dealt. Because, like, her character basically exists to be disrespected constantly by all the other men who are basically like, she made one suicide attempt in her past and therefore she is a hysterical woman. And Norman, the, like, good guy main character, who I think we're actually supposed to like and be rooting for, is, like, the smarmiest psychiatrist asshole who clearly has no respect for women. And I'm just like, what is even happening here? Why are we supposed to be rooting for this guy? He's just terrible. So it makes me really sad that this is what we get. You know, even when we get this movie that has pretty good gender parity and lots of people of color, the women don't get real respect from the author of the original source text, and it comes through in the adaptation of the film. And I think my reaction to this is compounded by the fact that I've been reading Games People Play, which is a 1960s psychology textbook about like the ways that people communicate and like mind games, and how they can have kind of like an apparently harmless social interaction, but the ulterior motives that are going on underneath it are specific things that are causing a different reaction. So I've been reading this book, and I keep getting progressively more and more pissed off. Like, I don't know if I'm actually going to finish it. At first I was like, I can wade through the misogyny to like get to the interesting parts of like how this person has theorized the anatomy of these mind games working. But like, it starts out in the introduction by saying like, without prejudice, I'm going to default to he for all examples here, and for all psychotherapists, and like, I will only use she if the example necessitates that it be a female. Which, you know, without prejudice though, right? All the examples though that are female are like there to show how neurotic and hysterical women are. And so like, I feel like I would not normally do this, but because this is relevant and also like made me so angry about like the history of psychology and psychiatry, which is a fairly new branch of medicine, and how like historically awful it has been towards women. Mm-hmm. The history of it literally is mostly like just like finding reasons to lock women up. I have found several points where I just started highlighting things that pissed me off. Here is a bit about a specific game, which is called If It Wasn't For You. And the idea of this game is that a woman says, and again, this is like he has chosen the woman as the example, because it has to be a woman, right? A woman says to her husband, who she's chosen a specifically domineering husband, if it wasn't for you, I could go out dancing. and I would like to ballroom dance. And the husband's like, no, you can't. And she's like, oh, well, she says, I would like to go out ballroom dancing. And the husband says, no, you're not allowed to do that. And then she says, if it wasn't for you, I could go out ballroom dancing. And so on the surface, this is like, she wishes she could go ballroom dancing, but the husband won't let her. So he's being mean. And the underlying text, though, is that she really would be afraid of ballroom dancing and she needs him to say no so she can feel justified in that. So I will read you this passage from this book about this. The wife's response is something like a petulant kick in the shins. Confirmation of the wife's position, all men are tyrants, is the existential advantage of this game. This position is a reaction to the need to surrender that is inherent in the phobias, a demonstration of the current structure which underlies all games. The expanded statement would be, if I went out alone in a crowd, I would be overcome by the temptation to surrender. At home, I don't surrender, he forces me, which proves that all men are tyrants. Hence, this game is commonly played by women who suffer from feelings of unreality, which signifies their difficulty in keeping the adult in charge in situations of strong temptation.
What?
What?
Okay, so, like, it's constantly doing this, where, like, the examples that, quote, have to be women are all about how women really need to be dominated. And it's just awful.
What is this book again?
It's called Games People Play, and it is a respected classic psychiatry textbook. It's literally just terrible. All the examples of things that people, like, if you're not actually playing games, you could have rituals or pastimes, and rituals are like when you say, hi, how are you, and you know how that's supposed to go. And a pastime is like the kinds of topics that might be acceptable for people to talk about in a social setting, like a party. And so, like, his examples of what is okay for people to talk about at parties that are pastimes, he does the thing again where he, like, breaks it down by gender, and some of them are like what things that women talk about. And the things that women talk about are like clothing and how terrible their husbands are. Men, however, can talk about everything.
Wow.
That's wow.
So, like, there's all this stuff in there about this and about how, like, women, you know, really just, you know, they need to be able to complain about their husbands, because if they don't, then they can't, like, they would have to admit that they're afraid of everything.
What? Oh, so, I'm sorry. So why are you reading this again?
I started reading this because I was having a conversation with a friend about, like, the idea of the subtext of what goes on under an apparently innocuous social transaction. So, like, if I say, hi, how are you? And you say, I'm good, how are you? That's a social transaction.
Right.
But, like, then if there's a game involved, it might be like, say, I want to go out to dinner with my partner, and one of us says, like, do you want to go out to dinner? Yes. Where do you want to go? I don't know. I don't really mind. You decide. The partner chooses a place. And then I say, oh, I don't really want to go there, but I guess we'll go there because you chose it. The game that's being played there is me getting my partner to make a decision, which I don't want to have to do, so that then if I don't like it, I don't have to be blamed for it going wrong. But I'm apparently giving my partner the right to choose.
This is so weird.
But, like, that's the idea. So I was like, oh, the idea of that is kind of interesting. And I'd like to learn more about, like, the kinds of things that people have thought about and analyzed there. But I think I might give up on this book, because I think I'm about halfway through it. And the rampant misogyny is just horrible.
Yeah, no kidding.
No shit.
Whoa.
So I see how you're tying this in with...
So basically, like, yeah, I was reading this book, and it was not making me feel terribly kindly disposed towards the history of psychiatry and psychology and the way it treats women. And then there's, like, 2 hours and 15 minutes of Dustin Hoffman being apparently the star we're supposed to like in this movie and be rooting for, who is basically being a dirtbag psychiatrist, who's really not the worst, but he's certainly not the best.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's actually one of the things that really struck me about this movie, is I really did not like the way Beth got treated at all. And it
I mean, she's, it's bullshit.
Yeah, no, it bothers me so much. And I mean, it's like, you know, the Dustin Hoffman character just like messes with her and gaslights her and all that. And then, what's his butt? Barnes. Yeah. I mean, like, just out of the fucking blue, he's like, oh, well, you know, she tried to kill herself however many years ago. And so she's going to try to kill us all. And she's crazy. And I was just like, where the fuck is this even coming from? And then they're like going over her patient records and just.
Yeah. Like, how do they even have her patient records down in the fucking habitat?
Yeah. It makes absolutely no sense. And I mean, you know, like, it's weird. Like, the Dustin Hoffman character is a complete dirtbag, especially since he apparently slept with Beth and didn't bother to mention that he was married.
He's clearly, like, terrible ethics-wise and a bad doctor. But he also has no respect for Rowan. But, like, it's not just him. Everybody in the movie treats her like crap.
Yeah, and, like, I'm just like, what was the deal with Barnes? So when he got cut in half by the door, I was like, good! I don't have to listen to him talk about Beth anymore because it was so upsetting to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. So, like, basically, yeah, as the movie wore on, I was like, maybe Sharon Stone is just, like, phoning it in because she's so pissed off at the way this character is treated. I can't blame her.
She read the script and realized this is a ram job. It's like, why am I going to put any effort into this?
Like, imagine being Sharon Stone in the situation. Like, you're a pretty big-name star, and you get approached for a script with Dustin Hoffman, who is also a big-name star, and Samuel Jackson, who is also a big-name star, and you're like, that's a pretty cool cast. And it's for a Michael Crichton movie, which, like, everybody knows Jurassic Park was fucking amazing and blockbuster, right? And you're like, yes, I agree. I'll do this movie. And then you get there, and this is what you have to do.
Yeah. Well, and especially because compared to Jurassic Park, you know, the roles for one in Jurassic Park were not bad. This, like, yeah, I found it intensely upsetting, just the whole thing with Beth.
Yeah, and Queen Latifah.
Yeah, because she deserved so much better, because Queen Latifah's awesome.
Way better.
I know we have a decent amount of diversity in this cast, but did actually two of the women actually ever speak to each other at any point in this movie? I'm not sure.
I wasn't actually like watching for Bechdel test passing. I don't think it did though. I mean, if two women spoke to each other, it was definitely not for more than 30 seconds.
Well, and you think, you know, what there were the two women who are working there, and there's Beth and Queen Latifah, and the other woman got killed.
Yeah. It's gone.
And they get killed pretty early on. It's not like we get to have them for too long.
I don't think that they have a quick... I think if they exchange any words, it's like a couple of words at most. I can't recall that they do.
I don't think it probably passes the Bechdel test at all.
I want to just note that for this like past 5 minutes, my mic has been muted, so I keep trying to interject. But you guys keep talking, and so I think you're ignoring me.
Oh, no, Sean.
We just haven't heard you because you haven't been talking out loud. So use your words, Sean.
Use your words.
I started to feel really bad.
Aw.
I was like, they're not listening to me. I wanted to note that, so with Beth's character in particular, like, everything comes down to Dustin Hoffman's narrative in... And so, like, even Barnes, right, his interpretation of who Beth is all a result of notes he's received from her psych records. How he got them, we have no idea, but he's the military, so I guess we just have to accept that they can, like, get secret records or whatever. But I think, like, that's really important to note that, like, this really tears down, like, Dustin Hoffman as a good character. Like, he's not. His character's a scumbag, and everything about how people perceive Beth is funneled through Hoffman's character. And so I feel like that's like he's like the conduit through which her character is being sort of systematically like wrecked throughout this film. I mean, even the moment at which, right, he sort of joins forces with Sam Jackson's character and against her, it's sort of this thing where it's like it's all based on his perceptions of her, based on his own hangups about shit he did to her, which we've learned throughout the movie is like this really awful garbage. I mean, he is really a terrible scumbag of a person. And I think the worst part of this film is that the end moments, which I'm sure we're about to talk about, wipe all of that away. Cause he does eventually apologize in this. He says it's a shitty apology, but it's an apology of some sort. He says, I'm sorry for what I did to you. right? Like, that was inappropriate. I should never have done that. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, so he kind of sort of accepts responsibility, sort of. But then they just wipe it all away. And so what we realize is anything that they may have learned about each other and about how horrible he is as a person, wiped away. Doesn't matter. None of that matters. And that is frustrating.
Yes, it is very frustrating. I agree. You mentioned the ending. It's your turn to go next. Do you want to tackle it?
The ending is like the dumbest shit I have ever seen. It really is some dumb shit. I mean, you've already described it, Julia. Like, they hold hands and count to three and then they just forget. But that's never explained. How the fuck did they forget? There's no explanation for the sphere's powers. They just suddenly magically figure it out by a, like, butt osmosis or some shit. Or, like, Dustin Hoffman, like, communes with the sea snakes and suddenly figures it out. I don't understand how any of that came out. And then they just wipe it away. And there's, like, that's it? That's what we do, is we just do this, like, romantic music thing and we just go, oh, one, two, three, and we just gone. And then it's, like, awkward moments where you're holding Sam Jackson's hand, which would be awkward. I agree. If you were randomly holding Sam Jackson's hand, very awkward moment.
I would totally hold Sam Jackson.
I would with his consent.
Yep.
I should know.
Informed consent.
Right? But it would certainly be awkward if you found out you were randomly holding Sam Jackson's hand in a room within a large military vessel. That would certainly be a very awkward moment. I would just say. I feel like he'd probably punch me in the face. But I don't know. But the ending is so hokey. It like, the way the music plays, it gives this sort of, like, new agey feel to it, as though we're making some sort of great ethical choice, and it's, like, this very complicated thing, but it's not really that complicated. It's just nonsensical. None of it makes any sense. They just forget. How? We don't know. They just magically forget everything. And I got to the end is just dumb as fuck. It's sort of like they got to this movie and they're like, well, we have to figure out how a way to get out of this. And so we'll do this because we got nothing else to do because there's no other solution. And it's all hinged on the Sam Jackson thing where he says, like, we must all die because clearly they don't know about it. Did it never occur to anybody that, like, maybe the military kept it a secret? Did anyone think about that? That's a possibility.
So a fun fact that I feel like, again, in the book version of it, this probably would feel super hand wavy, but also, like, slightly more believable. A fun fact, in the ending of the book, this is one way it diverges from the ending of the movie. They decide that this information is too dangerous to be public. So that's why they decided to wipe their memories, and they decide to replace their memories with mundane memories of technical failure. And then, as, like, they're talking about, like, their colleagues who died under the sea and the mundane technical failure that they've replaced their memories with and feeling sad, Norman looks at Beth and is like, she looks incredibly lovely despite her hardships, which apparently is supposed to signify that Beth did not give up her powers. Because she's using them to manifest prettiness.
What?
What?
Well, you know, because all women really want is to be pretty.
Certainly, if I was a kick-ass marine biologist who was selected to go on a first contact mission, I know that would be my top goal.
And I would definitely want the super skeezy guy I slept with who didn't tell me that he was married to think I was pretty.
Definitely.
Quad goals.
You and me both, Rachel. Fist bump.
Yep.
Wow. And here's, okay, so then the book doesn't make this any better, even if Sharon Stone's character has this. So they're forgetting that they have these powers. That's not the same thing as removing the powers. They're just forgetting that they have them. Doesn't the movie realize, okay, you've forgotten you can manifest things in your mind and make them reality?
Well, I think the idea is that it manifests whatever they imagine. So they imagine themselves as not having those powers and therefore they won't have them.
I think Star Trek, the original series, did it better.
I feel like read The Secret and you understand the laws of attraction, those are in play here.
God, no.
That is a book I have never read.
bad.
Don't.
No.
I feel like that's probably for the best, and you should never do that.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Rachel, you have the last dislike.
So my dislike is that I still have like 40 minutes of this movie left and I'm going to watch it.
Rachel, I don't know why you're doing this to yourself.
You're Patreon backers.
I started taking notes and I was like, no, I'm going to finish my notes. So I'll have another beer, but I have to spend another 40 minutes on this movie, which is going to take approximately 7 hours.
It is. It's going to take forever. I'm sorry. I don't envy you at all. I'm going to, like, as soon as we hang up with this call, I'm going to eat some sushi and watch Revolutionary Girl Utena, which is much better.
I would agree.
I'm going to watch Deadpool.
That is also
a better choice.
I have DVDs around here. I watch something. I don't have any Revolutionary Girl Utena. I don't, although I've seen a couple episodes of that, so I know what that is. But I'm unschooled in anime in general, though.
It is a weird anime, Paul.
It is very so weird. But it's
they spend 5 minutes walking up that staircase every time. I know.
Oh, it's so good though. The music, man.
Yeah,
so
the music's good. But they do it. It's like every time. Okay, we're going up the spiral staircase to have the duel. Why are we talking about other stuff again?
I really like that part because now it's like a nice musical break when I can actually check Twitter because it's subtitled, so I can't check Twitter any other time. But then like I'm compelled to tweet about it as I watch because it's so fucking weird and amazing.
It is certainly much more interesting than the movie we are actually talking about today.
Which we need to grade and shut out here before we wind up running longer than the actual movie.
Oh, right. Yeah. So what are our grades?
So can I just say that the note I'd written in my second dislike was, so I ranted about the ending, but all I actually wrote in here was the goddamn ending of this movie.
That's all you need.
That's all I really needed. So
I feel like that's totally fair, really. How much effort do you need to put into those notes for this movie? How much effort does this movie deserve?
I think the word no appears 37 times in my Sea Snake section.
Use your words, Jerry.
Use your words.
I even wrote down
like
the scientific
names.
Like,
if you want to have an encapsulation of Norman's dirtbagness as a person, Jerry says at multiple points, don't call me Jerry.
And he keeps doing it. Norman replies
with, what do you want me to call you, Jerry?
He keeps doing it.
Well, and
like, he literally says, what do you want to be called, Jerry?
Yeah, and I just, the dialogue in this movie is so poorly written. Like, people do not use each other's.
No, except for Ted. We get to hear Ted's name, but that's because it's three letters, so it's easy to remember.
All right, so let's grade this thing.
Let's grade this thing. All right, Paul. Final thoughts, grade, go.
Okay, final thoughts. This, I mean, even with a dirtbag character, this movie had an interesting premise up to the point where they actually decide to leave the spaceship and just spend the rest of the movie inside the habitat rather than exploring the freaking spaceship. So there is some interesting format of the movie. If the movie's completely wasted, there we've covered a lot of the sins in this movie. I can't fail it because some of the start setup is fine. So I am going to be nice to this movie. I'm going to be generous to this movie. I'm going to give it a D-.
That's generous.
I could fail this thing easily if I wanted to, but we don't have all night to talk about it.
Fair enough. All right, Julia, what about you?
Yeah, I'm going to say that it had a couple of points that made me smile. How did you like the giant squid? Samuel yes. Jackson's egg sequence. And not the squid egg sequence, but Samuel Jackson loving eggs and hating squid. But I have to say, overall, it was terrible. It was boring and stuff. But at the same time, it was not as horrible as a lot of things that we've had to watch for torture cinema, which I have given failing grades to. It was just boring and badly paced and had a lot of things that were annoying. And the lack of respect toward the women and Queen Latifah dying were like super anger inducing, but not like I certainly didn't get as angry at this as I got at Transformers or Mazes and Monsters. So also it didn't induce a migraine. So that's always exciting. I guess I have to give it a D.
That's fair. That is fair enough, Julia. All right, so that's me. So, yeah, so this movie's not good. I think that's been well established. It is not the worst thing, as Julia said, that we have ever watched for this show. by a pretty wide margin. This movie's not a good movie, but it is not. It is certainly not the worst thing we have ever watched. There is some stupid shit in here. The science stuff, I feel like maybe is things that only I would pick up on in terms of the sea snake thing, because I'm apparently obsessed with snakes, and so that thing as a thing that comes up. I am so ridiculous that I even wrote down the scientific names of snakes in my description. I don't know why, but I did. So I give it a D because while it's dumb, it's a stupid movie, it's boring, it is certainly not the worst thing we've ever watched, and so I can't give it anything lower than that. So yeah. So Rachel, your final thoughts and grade.
I am angry at this movie because it is boring and it has a massive giant squid attack sequence that takes approximately 17 hours to play out and does not actually have a giant squid in it. And I'm just so offended by that and by the squid shatting, you know, the squid shat of the eggs, like, and I'm incredibly bothered by how Beth was treated and, you know, but on the other hand, there's some stuff that I liked. I thought that Jerry was pretty creepy up until you find out that Jerry is supposed to be Harry and then it's just dumb. So it's basically like it had some little things in it that were almost kind of cool, and the movie just like took the interesting stuff it could have done and completely fucked it up. I'll go ahead and give it a D. I kind of want to give it a D minus, but I do like user words, Jerry. So I think I will actually give it a D.
Wow. That gives it the D. So that gives us basically like a D.
So like Paul gave it the lowest grade. I feel like that's kind of amazing.
That's not unusual.
I feel like it offended Paul in ways that he did not get to fully describe to us.
So another thing that makes me kind of like really feel like Paul's lower grade is deserved is that in some ways this movie reminded me of The Black Hole. Not that it had a similar plot in a lot of ways, but like there were certain sequences where I was like, this really feels like a frame by frame recreation of them like discovering the ship in the black hole. Or like going through space in a vehicle or whatever. And like the music in the black hole is better. The sets in the black hole are pretty amazing. And I can see how, since Paul loves the black hole, which I had to give a really low grade because it totally did trigger migraines. I could see really being angry at this movie if you love The Black Hole and, like, this has subconsciously reminded you that that movie exists and you're not watching it.
And instead you're watching this movie. This fucking movie. Because
there was totally a point where I was like, Moss, this is really reminding me of The Black Hole. Like, are we going to meet Sir KitchenAid? But we did not. Sadly.
Oh, God. I did think about The Black Hole when watching this movie explicitly. I was thinking, I actually had a rejected tagline saying it like The Black Hole except underwater and no Maximilian, but I rejected that as being too obscure and too inside baseball. But I appreciate you.
Well, you are not the only person who felt that, because I totally like called that out to Moss while we were watching it last night.
Yeah, so we should also note that the average grade for The Black Hole was a C-.
Yeah,
so
but that's by definition, I really pumped it was a passing up, grade. Yeah, I really pumped that up though.
Well, no, most of us gave it in the C range.
Yeah, I think I had to give it a D because it just, like, I was in so much pain after that movie.
Yours made sense, right?
I cannot watch that movie again, which is very sad because Sir KitchenAid killing that guy with his whisk was kind of amazing.
Yes.
Sir KitchenAid kills Psycho.
Besides, Paul, the tagline you came up with for this episode was just so beautiful.
It really was quite beautiful.
And
it really was.
I want to thank us listeners for spending the time listening to us talk about this horrible movie.
Yeah, and guys, I think now we should join hands and forget this movie ever happened.
I'm not holding your hand, Rachel.
You have to forget what we just did, Julia.
You're holding my hand.
Okay, fair enough. Well, we will count to four, starting with me, then Julia,
then Paul,
then Rachel.
Does that mean we can forget that we ever had to watch this movie?
Yes, we will have forgotten the whole thing, including Rachel, who will forget that she actually paid for this.
I feel like this is too dangerous, though, because then we might end up having to watch it again. We wouldn't realize how bad it was.
because we will recognize when I put it on the Torture Cinema page that it has been done. So I will count. Right. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hey guys, what are we even doing here?
I don't know.
Why are you holding my hand, Sean?
Let's just like end this Skype call. This is kind of weird and awkward.
I like to be awkward, Rachel. I don't know why we're talking. So, yeah, you're right, Julie. You're weird. We should just leave.
Your palm's kind of sweaty. I'm uncomfortable with this.
Yeah, it is really awkward. All right. So we should
But Rachel,
say,
you're looking especially pretty tonight.
Okay. Awkward ending. And scene. Our intro and outro music comes from Nocturnia by Psychedelic Pedestrian. You can find out more about them on freemusicarchive.org, including the full version of the song. We obviously made some edits to the song, including sound effects and, of course, shortening the length. You can also support us by going to patreon.com/skiffyandfanty. If you'd like to send us a suggestion, you can do so at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com. You can also go to our website, skiffyandfanty.com, and check out the little suggested topic form at the top there. You can also just send us emails. You can also find us on Twitter at skiffyandfanty or on Facebook at The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Just search for us on there. Thanks for listening, and we hope to see you next time.